IFPRI Policy Seminar, the 2014 Global Nutrition Report Launch, held on December 9, 2014 in Washington, D.C. Speaker, Lawrence Haddad, Senior Research Fellow at IFPRI.
So thank you, Gwendolyn, and thank you, Chair of the Board, and thank you for coming. I was talking to somebody this morning about the session today, and I said, I hope you're coming to the session. They said, I'll be there, don't worry, there's free food. So I'm glad you got your priorities right. This report is the first in a series of reports. There will be two more, at least, one next September at the UN General Assembly, and then one in the next June 2016 at the Brazil 2016 Olympics. What this report is trying to do is to do three things. There's a stakeholder group behind this report, and I'll tell you a bit about them. It's trying to assess progress in malnutrition, trying to identify actions that accelerate that progress, and trying to strengthen accountability to know if we're not making progress, why not, and who do we need to turn to say, do more. It's global in the sense of it tries really hard to pull together the under-nutrition community and the community that works on over-nutrition, overweight, obesity, NCDs, non-communicable disease. There's a stakeholder group of about 20 or 30 different stakeholders, UN agencies, countries, donor agencies, civil society groups, research groups, and they're all listed on the logos on the back of the report. There are about, there's an independent expert group that I co-chair of about 20 different people. Some of them may be in the room, I'm not sure. And then there are 60 different authors in the report, lots of panels, lots of technical notes, lots of bits of data analysis, lots of comments from lots of different people, and again, some of the authors might be in the room, and if they are, thank you. What we try to do, in addition to this narrative, is to pull together for every country, so not just so-called developing countries, but for every country in the world, 193 of them, over 80 different indicators of nutrition-related indicators that we care about. So not just impact or outcome indicators like stunting and wasting or micronutrient deficiencies or overweight and obesity, but also things like coverage rates of programs, spending rates on nutrition, policy quality, those kinds of things. How much is spent on different sectors that are relevant for nutrition? What's happening to food security? What's happening to water and sanitation? So we try to put all of that together. All the data are available on the GNR website, the Global Nutrition Report website. The CKM team here have been just absolutely phenomenal in all the things they've done to support this report. John Parker from The Economist, I had a long conversation with him in Rome at the first launch, and he said, Lawrence, I can actually understand this report. Congratulations. And I said, that's all down to CKM translating it. So the messages. Here are the key messages. Nutrition is the foundation for the Sustainable Development Goals. And we go through some of the arguments, and I'll go through those in a minute. Malnutrition is a concern for all countries. Again, we'll explain what that means in a minute. Multiple burdens are the new normal. So the days when countries had to deal with undernutrition, then they had a bit of a breather, and they had to then deal with overweight, obesity, and non-communicable disease, those days are gone. And we show in the report that 45% of all countries are having to deal with both of these things at the same time. Progress on meeting various nutrition targets is slow at the global level, but behind that global stasis, apparently, there's a massive amount of churning at the country level. There's a massive amount of things that are happening, some countries making very spectacular advances. We make the argument that we need more ambition on targets, on nutrition targets. The SDGs are 2030, remember. The World Health Assembly targets are to 2025, and we say you don't just want a business-as-usual extension of the World Health Assembly targets to 2030. You need to do much more than that. Things have changed from 5 years ago, and there's more reason to be optimistic now. Six, scaling up. Obviously, we know interventions, whether they're nutrition-specific, the actual things that are we have a direct impact on nutrition, have a direct intent to have an impact on nutrition. Those things need to be scaled up, as do nutrition-sensitive interventions. We know that. But we say, again, we make the argument that scaling up is more possible than ever before. And finally, we talk about accountability within the system. And we say that for various reasons, nutrition accountability needs to be strengthened, and we make some suggestions on how to do that. So the first point, we make quite strongly, nutrition is a foundation for sustainable development. And what's the basis for that statement? Well, first of all, there are three big things we talk about. One is this statistic. This is an old statistic now, it's 18 months old. It's out of the Lancet series from last year, the Bob Black paper, where they show that in one way or another, 45% of all child deaths under the age of 5 are in one way or another connected to poor nutrition, right? 45%. So that means of those 17 pictures of kids in the previous slide, 8 of them won't make it to their 5th birthday. They won't exist, right? Then we go through, and John Hodnot and his colleagues kindly generated some benefit-cost ratios for us to go beyond the work they had published last year. And for 40 countries, we generate benefit-cost ratios that says if you scale up nutrition programs, direct programs, nutrition-specific programs to 90%, you get a 20% reduction in stunting. That's what The Lancet tells us last year. What does that translate through into in terms of improved school attainment? And then what does that translate through to in terms of increased productivity in the labor market and increased wage rates, improved labor supply, and improved earnings? And when you work that through for 40 different countries, you get a very wide range from about 4-1 benefit cost to about 50-1. And the median figure in the conservative set of estimates is 16-1. So for every dollar you invest, you get 16 back over the course of the lifespan. And for those of you interested in stock market returns, that's equivalent to a 30-year compound rate of interest of 10%, which outperforms the Dow Jones over the last 80 years. So it's a fantastic investment, nutrition. It's not just a fantastic investment to prevent undernutrition. We pull together a lot of the literature on the economic consequences of obesity and overweight, and here's just a number from the US, 10% of median income lost to obesity in the workplace in the USA. This is due to absenteeism and also presenteeism, which is a new term I found out. I can tell you about that later on if you're interested. We also cycle through all the intergenerational issues around nutrition. Poor, malnourished mothers tend to give birth, or more likely to give birth, to malnourished babies. And if they're girls, they're more likely to grow up to be malnourished girls and give birth to malnourished babies. So there's this intergenerational cycle of malnutrition. And we focus a lot on that because sustainable development at its core is really about intergenerational equity. What are we doing in this generation that constrains or enhances the choices the next generation has to develop the planet and live well with the planet? So we talk a lot about that. So despite those arguments about preventable mortality, economic returns, and intergenerational equity, we find that of the 17 sustainable development goals, nutrition is in one of those, which is great. But those 17 goals have 169 targets behind them. And only in one of those targets is nutrition mentioned. It's mentioned in the context of stunting and wasting, so it's good that two indicators are in there. But something's wrong with that picture. 45% of preventable mortality, 16-1 median ratio, intergenerational equity, one mention out of 169. So we say to the nutrition community, get your act together. Start lobbying harder for your issue, because this is the accountability mechanism for the next 15 years. And if it's not in there in a more substantial and higher profile way, it's just very easy to ignore it. Next point, whichever way you look at the world, we say that malnutrition affects every country. This is a really important point. If you look at, we set up three red lines for nutrition. One is around stunting, one is around overweight, and one is around anemia for women of reproductive age. And we say, WHO has some very clear thresholds for when this is a very serious public health situation and when it's not. And when you file all the countries through those three thresholds, you only find two countries that are not on the wrong side of those thresholds for all three. And that's China and South Korea. Those are the only two countries that avoid being in the red zone, if you like, for those three issues. And China is very, very close in terms of anemia for women of reproductive age. I think the rate is 19.7 and the threshold is 20. So for all intents and purposes, nearly every country in the world has a serious malnutrition problem. And I think that also makes it a very 21st century post-2015 kind of development issue, because those are the kinds of issues every country is affected, countries working together can learn from each other and deal with it. And we also say that the new normal really is now countries dealing with both undernutrition and overweight obesity. This is a potential problem for policymakers. We know we've all sat in rooms with policymakers, and policymakers say, tell me the one thing I need to do to deal with malnutrition. It's not that simple, right? Even in a context-specific situation, it's not that simple. Well, it just got a bit more complicated. But in the report, we say, don't let complexity be an excuse to do nothing. Make this complexity a spur to innovation. Think hard about the trade-offs. If you're running a cash transfer program, think hard about not only whether it will reduce undernutrition, but whether it will inadvertently spur obesity and overweight. Think about the trade-offs, think about the sequencing. Use your 3D glasses and see malnutrition in multiple dimensions. We then go into the whole thing about, is the world on course or off course for the six World Health Assembly indicators? These are they. And there's nothing new in this. The WHO, the World Bank, and UNICEF report on this every year, and they've reported that the world actually is off course on all of these at a global level. The one that's moving the best is the stunting target. The projections of a year ago are that we will be at, about 123 million stunted kids by 2025, and the target is to be at 100 million. We're currently at about 161 million. But the others, wasting's not doing much, anemia's not doing much, low birth weight, we don't know what it's doing because the data are so bad. Exclusive breastfeeding is improving a bit, but not quickly enough. But behind that, there are a number of countries that are actually on course. If you apply these global targets at the country level, there are quite a few countries that are on course for these targets. In fact, 69 countries, we've only got data for 100 countries out of the 193, but of the ones for which we do have data, 69 are on target for one or more of the indicators. The bad news is that 31 are not on course for any of them. However, there are some really big countries that have really serious problems that are making very good progress. And here I just highlighted a few of them: under five stunting, under five overweight, and exclusive breastfeeding. And I've highlighted these countries because they are large countries, they have serious problems, but they are making very rapid dents in those problems. So there's a lot of cause for optimism in the report, and so it's not all doom and gloom by any means. And when good things align, when knowledge, funding, commitment, coverage, and underlying trends align, extraordinary things can happen. And we highlight in the report the Maharashtra case. Maharashtra is a state in India. It's over 100 million people. If it was a country, it would be the 12th biggest country in the world. So it's a big deal for Maharashtra, it's a big deal for India, and it's a big deal globally. The stunting rate in Maharashtra fell from 37% to 24% in 7 years, between 2005 and 2012. That's an extraordinary rate of decline, faster than any country in recent history except for China. Why did it fall? Why did this number fall? Not for any big spectacular reason, but for modest improvements on a broad range of indicators and outcomes. So economic growth was strong, but not the fastest in India. Poverty reduction was good, but not the fastest in India. There were public commitments at the state level to say we will, in the forms of missions, public commitments by the chief minister in the state saying, you can hold us accountable for malnutrition, it's a top priority for us. And then just some very basic things like filling frontline vacancies. The vacancy rate for the main child development program in India for frontline workers was 50%. 50% of those frontline workers' vacancies were not filled. They reduced that to 15% in the course of 4 or 5 years. They increased nutrition spending from a very low base of about 1% to 1.5%. But a number of modest improvements led to really spectacular improvements in stunting. So we make the case that the nutrition context might seem quite static at the global level, but it's actually very dynamic. Lots of things are happening, lots of new data, new modeling, new funding, and new commitments. Therefore, we say we need to increase the ambition on the progress we can make for the 2030 goals. They must be more than just mere extensions of the 2025 goals. And one of the things that we highlight in the report, but we weren't quite brave enough to course it throughout the report, are the new data from India. So then there are some new national statistics from India that suggest that stunting rates have gone down from 48% to about 38-39% over the last 8 years. So that's actually, so 38% is still very high, not good enough, really, but it's a big decline, and it's twice as fast as the previous declines India was showing. And if we believe the numbers, if they hold up, we actually have 10 million less stunted kids than we thought we did in September, globally. So that those kinds of new data that are emerging and new sets of progress give us the basis for thinking we actually need to be a bit more ambitious with some of these targets. We talk about the need to scale up, not just in terms of coverage of programs, but also the intensity, the quality, the effectiveness of programs. And we talk about some of the different statistics on coverage. So this is a very fussy graphic you probably can't see, but there are 8 different interventions or practices that are important for nutrition. These are interventions or practices that the Lancet series from last year and the one before it say these work, so they're important to scale up. What you can see for these 8, the green arrows are basically saying countries at the top of the arrow have really good coverage rates. So Nicaragua, 79% coverage rate for iron folate supplementation in pregnancy for more than 90 days, which is a good thing. The country with data that's at the bottom of that coverage rate only has 0.1% coverage. So a very wide range of country coverage statistics for that one intervention. And we say, hey, it's interesting, why is there such a big coverage rate for different countries, and why are different countries seem to do much better on certain interventions than on other interventions? So if a country is good on one set of interventions, it doesn't seem to be good across the board. So we say if you could only get the Nicaragua performance on the first one, ally that with the Malawi one on the second intervention, with Rwanda on the third, and so on and so forth, you could really have a fantastic impact on nutrition, just from the nutrition-specific interventions on their own. Moving to nutrition-sensitive, the need to move beyond just nutrition-specific interventions, we make the case, look, there's a lot of money out there in sectors that are relevant for nutrition. We need, in the nutrition community, to learn to speak the language of these other sectors. Nothing terribly new there. But we need to make the case, what's in it for them? Why should someone in agriculture pay attention to nutrition? There are lots of sectors that are competing for agriculture's attention. What's so great about us? Why should agriculture pay attention? And again, we pull together all the evidence around building on Marie and Harold's paper from last year in The Lancet, and pulling in other stuff that more recently. We just say, here are some of the things that the evidence suggests you could do if you want to make your intervention more nutrition sensitive, and here's why it might be to an advantage of that sector to do it. And we re-emphasize this by highlighting some of the IFPRI speed data, the data set that IFPRI convenes here. And we say, just for look at the data from Africa from 2010, 35% of African budgets are spent on agriculture, education, health, and social protection. There's no water and sanitation data in the speed data set. If we can just get some of that money to be more aligned towards nutrition, again, we could have a really massive impact at scale on stunting, wasting, and all the other nutrition indicators around there. Finally, we say we need to hold ourselves to account. So one of the biggest surprises for me of doing this exercise was that how little data we have on what governments spend on nutrition. There's virtually no data out there. And it's really shocking, because that really is the fundamental building block, it seems to me, of accountability. If a citizen doesn't know how much their government is spending on nutrition, you can't really hold them accountable. These three countries managed to do it Guatemala, Tanzania, and Zambia, with the help and the prodding of the civil society sector, NGOs and CSOs in their countries. So it's untracked, but not untrackable. And again, for the next report, we're going to be working closely with the Scaling Up Nutrition Movement to get more data from countries into the report. We also had to track, one of the tasks in the report is to track the 168 Nutrition for Growth commitments. This is the big event, the big pledging summit in London 18 months ago, at which $4 billion extra dollars was pledged for nutrition in the nutrition-specific arena. Well, behind that extra $4 billion were 168 commitments made by governments, donors, UN agencies. The CGIAR made a commitment. GAIN made a commitment, all sorts of organizations made commitments. So we went back and we said, this is what you said, now tell us what you've done. So it was all self-reporting. We had to pester people to tell us what they'd done. We then made an assessment of whether what they said they would do matched up with what they said they had done. The good news is that the ratio of on-course to off-course is about 5-1. That's good. 43% of the commitments are on-course. 9% are off course. The worrying thing is that 37% of the commitments, we couldn't make an assessment. There were some fabulously vague commitments that were made and some fabulously vague reporting on those commitments. And so we as a community are not terribly comfortable with making smart commitments, specific, measurable, et cetera, time-bound commitments. And we highlight some of the things that we can do to make smarter commitments. We cycle through the donor funding. The donors kindly put together some data for the Sun movement, and we drew on that data. So the good news is that donor disbursements on nutrition, these are for 13 different donors, those disbursements have increased over a two-year period. 2012 is the latest data that were available. The increased spending has gone up by 30% for nutrition specific and by 19% for nutrition sensitive, so that's good. The less good news is that it's still very, very low. Nutrition-specific spending is $500 million a year. Nutrition-sensitive is $1 billion a year. Just to put that in context, overall overseas development assistance for last year was $135 billion. We don't expect all nutrition funding to come out of ODA. Quite the contrary. The minority should come out of ODA. Most of it should come from the governments. But even if all of it's supposed to come from ODA, it's still about 1% of ODA. So plenty of room for improvement. We talk about businesses. We kind of hold our hands up and say we didn't do enough on businesses this year and the private sector, and we plan to do a lot more on that next year, working with GAIN, MI, the Sun Business Network, and a whole range of other groups and networks on their accountability. We talk a lot about how strong accountability needs empowered citizens. We draw on other sectors from other parts of development to say big social changes happen because they're powered by civil society, by NGOs, by alliances of citizens working with the media, working with researchers, working with a whole range of groups to make things happen. We talk about some of the tools that are available outside of nutrition. Those of you who work on corruption issues, on last mile issues, on health issues will be familiar with a lot of these. On gender issues, you'll be familiar with these tools. We highlight them, we say we need more innovation and more application of these tools, more testing of them within the nutrition community. And then finally, we talk about nutrition data. And we say that we think we need a step change in nutrition data. We need a revolution and not an evolution. I was reading a paper that actually Simon Maxwell shared with me by Morten Jervens, which is a paper from the Copenhagen Consensus. And Morten Jervin writes this paper that says, if you wanted to track all the indicators from the MDGs for all countries over a 25-year period, from 1990 to 2015, the cost of doing that would be $25 billion. And he says that's a lot. Well, I don't think that's a lot. I think that's $1 billion per year. I think that's peanuts, really. It's 1% of ODA. And you wouldn't expect, again, ODA to fund your M&E for your MDGs. I think the bigger issue that he raises is what's the value added of the extra data, and I think that's a harder question to answer. Nevertheless, we think there were some really glaring nutrition data gaps. Some of the gaps that we highlighted, 49% of all countries don't have enough data to assess whether they're on or off course for the World Health Assembly. These are indicators that have been ratified by over 180 ministries of health worldwide, and yet nearly half the countries can't actually assess whether they're on course or off course. 40% of the most recent child growth surveys are over 5 years old. You wouldn't run your economies on data that were over 5 years old. Why would you run your nutrition strategies on data that were over 5 years old? We highlight a few areas. I'm running out of time. We highlight a few areas that we think are really important to plug. Every one of you will have your own set of priorities. Every country will have their own set of priorities. We try hard not to impose our views. We say it's a country level set of priorities. But here are some. You can read them. Finally, the recommended actions. Embed nutrition more strongly in the SDGs. If you want nutrition to be taken more seriously, the SDGs are going to be the big game in town. There will be other things that are going on as well that are also important, but have a seat at the table for the SDGs in the next 6 months. You won't be able to change the goals, but maybe we can slip some of the indicators in to the SDGs. It doesn't have to be in SDG 2, which is where food and nutrition is. It can be in other ones. It doesn't matter where they are, as long as they're in there. Develop more ambitious targets. I've talked about that. Embrace the complexity of multiple burdens. Complexity doesn't have to be a bad word for policy. It could just be a word for saying be more strategic. Relentless focus on coverage of nutrition-specific interventions. The countdown to 2015, those of you who know about the maternal child nutrition world, they have been doing this for 10 years, and they focus relentlessly on program coverage because they say that's a really key indicator of government commitment, and we agree. Find resources outside the health sector for nutrition-sensitive interventions. There are a lot out there. So far, it's only $1 billion. It's a big world out there, and that should be at $10 billion. How can we get from $1 billion to $10 billion? Invest in a nutrition data revolution. Be selective. It doesn't have to be, you know, we shouldn't be drinking from the, what's the expression? What's the American expression? You don't want to drink from the, yes. Sorry? Kool-Aid. No, not Kool-Aid. From the fire hose. Thank you. You don't want to be drinking from a fire. It could be Kool-Aid as well. I don't know. Or a Kool-Aid fire hose. But you don't want to be drinking from the fire hose. You want to be a bit selective and judicious, of course. But you need to invest in this stuff. And then finally, be accountability champions. You can't go on about accountability without being an accountability champion yourself. So whether you're at IFPRI or 1,000 Days or the World Bank, you know, you have to be a champion. You have to practice what you preach. Thank you.